This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Acuron Corn Herbicide from Syngenta, an upgrade for growers who don't settle for average. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Okay, here we are. We are officially at later this month. We've been talking about the meetings later this month and the farm bill that was likely to be settled later this month and the blending requirements that would be released later this month. Well, there's not much month left, so let's get some issues settled.
From the studios of Farm Journal Broadcast, this is AgriTalk, agriculture's national talk show since 1994. Here's your host, Chip Flory.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for joining us again this morning. Welcome to AgriTalk. President Trump, I think he's left now for the G20 summit in Argentina, and many in agriculture are calling the next few days the most important few days in decades for the U.S. markets. There is a lot riding on how well President Trump and his team performs at these meetings and how willing China will be to change its ways on some trade and business issues. Man, I wish I could figure out what the attitude of the markets will be on Monday. If we knew that, we'd know how well the trade talks between Trump and Chinese President Xi progressed. And there's a lot of movement on the RFS issues. No efforts to reallocate displaced blending requirements from last year or from 2018. Now it's time to review the waiver process for 2019. And the review is taking place while some waiver requests for the year ahead are already being considered, and some of these waivers we're hearing are likely to be granted. We're going to talk with Bob Dineen, Senior Strategic Advisor for the Renewable Fuels Association, to get the latest on what's happening with the RFS. And it sounds like we got the farm bill worked out. We'll talk with Pro Farmer Policy Analyst Jim Wiesmeyer about the bill and what got the leadership team over the final hurdle there on the farm bill. And at the end of the show, Paul Winters, Director of Public Affairs and federal communications for the National Biodiesel Board, will join us, because the RFS isn't just about ethanol. Biodiesel has skin in the game with the RFS as well. Right now, let's turn it over to Tyne Morgan, get an update on the news. Tyne, mate, what's happening?
What's not happening?
Chip, I know.
As you mentioned, finally a farm bill. The four main principals reaching an agreement. That's Senators Pat Roberts and Debbie Stabenow, as well as Congressman Mike Conaway and Colin Peterson. They say they are pleased to reach an agreement. They said, quote, "We are working to finalize legal and report language as well as CBO scores, but we still have more work to do. We are committed to delivering a new farm bill to America as quickly as possible," end quote. So what work still remains to be done? Well, Farm Journal Washington correspondent, who we'll hear from more later, Jim Wiesmeyer, reporting that includes getting specifics into legislative language, getting that Congressional Budget Office scoring as well. Now it's a question of timing. Some think the new farm bill could be unveiled either Friday or early next week. Senator Roberts has already said he expects this to be introduced as a standalone bill, not tied to spending, the spending bill that needs to get passed as well. Now, details are still in questions, but Jim Wiesmeyer will have all of that coming up here on AgriTalk. Anticipation is growing leading into the G20 summit in Buenos Aires that begins tomorrow. World leaders are already starting to arrive. President Trump is scheduled to meet with President Xi Jinping on Saturday. Now, a lot is riding on that conversation, as we've been reporting, including the discussion on trade. But the Trump administration, like they do, upping the ante, heading into the meeting, threatening to place a 40% tariff on automobiles from China. That would match China's current 40% tariff on U.S. automobiles. He also said China has not made any offers to address broader U.S. trade concerns. So what if a deal does not happen this weekend, Chip? We don't want to talk about it, but the Wall Street Journal reporting we could be on the brink of a new Cold War. Well, the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement could enter into its next phase as early as tomorrow. President Trump is expected to join Mexican and Canadian leaders to sign the USMCA tomorrow. But there are some concerns now that Mexico's outgoing president may back out and not sign the deal if there's no plan in place to lift the Section 232 tariffs by then. The tariffs on steel and aluminum by the U.S. sparked Canada and Mexico to place retaliatory tariffs on U.S. goods, including many ag products like potatoes, cheese, and pork. And to end our news, Bayer's making some major cuts. This comes after its purchase of Monsanto. On Thursday, Bayer announced it's selling a number of businesses and cutting jobs in order to recoup some of the 35% share price drop Bayer is seeing so far this year. Reuters reporting what is impacting agriculture, that Bayer is divesting its animal health division that some analysts value at nearly $8 billion. Bayer actually ranks fifth in veterinary medicine. As far as jobs, Reuters reporting it's cutting 12,000 of its 118,000 jobs worldwide. So not sure. There's no details on exactly how many of those jobs will come out of agriculture, but it sounds like the biggie for ag is Bayer said it's divesting its animal science brands, which was anticipated by many analysts.
Right. Chip. Right. Yeah. You know, I love how you said, Tyne, that the Trump administration is upping the ante with the threat of some tariffs on automobiles from China. It seems like they do this every time they go into some final talks, doesn't
right.
it?
Right.
And then they throw, I don't know, I call it a wrench into the works. So they throw this wrench into the works, and then somehow, some way, just before they sit down to finally talk, they reach in, pull that wrench out, and all the gears start to work again.
But Chip, do you think the market's becoming immune to this because we're not really seeing much reaction to that?
Absolutely.
Right? I mean, there's a lot of anticipation leading into it, but we really didn't see much market action. But I don't know. There's a lot riding
on
the line.
Tactics and strategy.
Yep, there's a lot riding on the line. We've talked about it. I know you'll go into it a lot more. But, you know, we'll talk about it on the show this weekend, too. What happens if we see a deal? What happens if we don't see a deal? And even if we do, how much time is it going to take? There's a lot of unknowns right now. And I know farmers, especially those, Chip, that are just trying to get the crop out of the field. I was in Texas this week, cotton harvest way behind, like half what they normally would be this time of the year. There's a lot of stress. And then you're trying to balance this, too. So feel for you guys out there and gals out there. We really do. But we'll try to follow this as closely as we can.
Cool stuff. Thanks, Tyne.
Thanks, Chip.
All right, let's bring in Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers. It's tough times in row crop and cotton and wheat, Greg, but, you know, things are really looking pretty good in the beef industry, aren't they?
Yes, Chip, good morning. And demand has kept up with this increasing supply, and prices have been pretty good. In fact, the last couple of years, those spring cattle markets just really exceeded expectations. So the question is, you know, this is a time for outlook. Looking forward, Chip, you know, what's cattle prices going to do next year? I've talked to several analysts. I'm working on an outlook piece, and they expect things to hold. You know, basically, they're calling for prices to be flat next year, which would be a good thing because we're seeing modest profits at the cow-calf level now. The good thing could be that the cost side is where possibly some savings are going to be. You know, grains are lower, as you mentioned. Fuel's definitely lower this year. So the cost side is looking pretty good.
Yeah.
So potential problems, right? So you and Tyne were just talking about this global economy and trade. So the macro economy and how that's going to affect consumers in the United States, that could have an impact and could throw, as you say, a wrench into the beef. If we want to look on the bullish side, you know, we've got some weather impacts already happening. We've got snow earlier than expected seasonally here. That's going to limit cattle performance. If that continues, we could see a reduction in beef production through the early part of the of the year.
Gotcha. Yeah, Greg, you know, we're at that time in the cycle where we should be expecting basically break even or even losing a little bit of money in the feeding business. But if we've got an opportunity to break even at this point in the cycle, it's not a bad situation for us to be in. Greg, thank you so much. Appreciate it, man.
Thank you.
All right, that's Greg Henderson from Drovers. Coming up next, we got Bob Dineen from the RFA right here on AgriTalk.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
We're live on the red carpet, waiting for the next generation Credenz soybean. There he is.
Oh, Ed, look, it's Credenz Liberty Link GT27.
I know, Adna. He's got elite genetics.
You gotta love his 4 bushel per acre yield advantage.
And he's both Liberty and glyphosate herbicide tolerant.
Definitely the year's hottest performer. Ask your Credenz retailer about the new Credenz Liberty Link GT27 soybeans.
Grow smart with BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
It's Digging Deeper with the Mosaic Company, the show where two agronomy experts take your questions about crop nutrition. Here are your hosts, Kurt Woolfolk and Ross Bender, senior agronomists from the Mosaic Company.
Hi, this is Kurt.
And this is Ross.
This Facebook user wants to know, how can I tell if I have a phosphorus deficiency and what can I do to help it?
One of the ways to spot nutrient deficiencies is getting out and walking in that field. From the perspective of identifying phosphorus deficiency, many nutrients you can identify whether or not they're deficient by identifying the color of different tissues on the particular plant. With respect to a crop like corn, a phosphorus deficiency is often observed by a purple coloring of the young leaf tissue.
MicroEssentials is a superior phosphate source when we consider dry granular fertilizer. It's important to remember that we have 4 nutrients in every single granule. That combination of sulfur and zinc, along with the phosphate, gets more P up into the plant.
Have any questions you want Kurt and Ross to tackle? Tweet to us at MicroEssentials on Twitter or send us a message on Facebook. And to learn more about smart crop nutrition, visit microessentials.com.
I'm joined by Steve Gomm, herbicide product lead for Syngenta. Steve, a lot of herbicides claim control of tough weeds, but what sets Acuron apart?
Good question, Chip. Acuron contains a unique active ingredient called bicyclopyrone, which no other corn herbicide has. It's very unique to Syngenta, and it complements the other 3 active ingredients to deliver more effective and more consistent control of the toughest weeds than any other product. While many products are labeled to control small-seeded broadleaf weeds like water hemp, Palmer amaranth, and lamb's quarters, there aren't as many that can effectively control large-seeded broadleaf weeds like giant ragweed, cocklebur, morning glory, and Russian thistle, but Acuron controls these and more. It also offers built-in burndown of weeds such as mare's tail, dandelion, ragweed, and foxtail. And if you have grass species like foxtail, barnyard grass, and fall panicum, you're going to notice a difference with Acuron because it offers better post-emergent grass controls than competitive brands. So overall, better weed control leads to better yield potential, and more bushels mean more money in your pocket. And we all know that that's critically important in today's market. So hopefully this provides your listeners with more detail on what Acuron delivers versus competitive products.
You know, this Acuron... And what is the what's the active ingredient that is unique to Acuron?
It's called bicyclopyrone.
Okay, bicyclopyrone. If that is what makes Acuron so unique that it handles all these different types of weeds, the small seeded broadleaves, the large seeded broadleaves, and then mare's tail, dandelion, ragweed, foxtail. That's a pretty important product and a product differentiation, isn't it?
Yeah, you bet. And when you look at the market today with the growing concern over weed resistance, it's really important that you've got an active ingredient that's going to give you the power to control all of these tough weeds that you see in corn these days.
Yeah, no question about it. Good stuff, Steve. Thank you. That is Steve Gomm with Syngenta with insights on what growers will see when they switch to Acuron.
You could win a Ford F-150 Raptor in the Ag Explorer Truck Sweepstakes. Enter at trucksweeps.com.
Man, I've got a lot that I want to cover in this segment of AgriTalk. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Chip Flory. Let's bring him in. Bob Dineen, Senior Strategic Advisor for the Renewable Fuels Association. Mr. Dineen, my friend, how are you?
Chip, I am just wonderful. How are you, sir?
I'm doing really well, really well. How's the new role treating you?
You know, it's been great. I really appreciate the board allowing me to craft a role that maybe requires a little less travel, a little less hassle, and allows me to focus on those things that, you know, I'm really interested in. So it's been great.
Good, good. Well, you're a talent for the industry. We don't want to lose it. There's no question about that. Before we talk about the final rule for 2019 RFS, let's look back a little bit first, Bob, because the demand that we lost to those hardship waivers, we're not getting that back, are we?
Well, certainly not through EPA. You know, we are litigating the way that EPA, in our view, abused its waiver authority in granting so many small refinery exemptions to companies that didn't need them, and it wasn't intended for. We think that EPA really went outside the bounds of what the statute would have allowed, and so we do have a lawsuit, and we may be able to get some satisfaction out of that, but more than likely the resolution will be prospective, not retrospective.
Right.
But we do want to see what we can get out of the lawsuit, for sure.
Well, and part of that is why I think the Trump administration has told EPA that you need to reevaluate, or the EPA needs to reevaluate how they issue those waivers, right?
Well, when you see such a dramatic increase in the number of waivers that have been granted, I mean, for 10 years, it was two or three a year.
Yeah.
And it was truly small refineries that, were getting them.
Yep.
Last year and this year, it's been a total of 49 small refineries in their definition that received these waivers. And it impacted more than 2.25 billion gallons of ethanol. I mean, that is just so far outside the scope of what that program had done in the past that I think reevaluating what changed, what is EPA looking at today that it wasn't looking at 2 years ago. And I do think it is smart for the administration to take a step back and reevaluate what it's been doing.
Well, yeah, I another way of saying that, Bob, is I think it's a good thing that they're going to try to get it right going forward, because they haven't been following the letter of the law of the RFS.
No, they sure haven't, and I think our lawsuit pointed that out to them pretty clearly.
Yep.
And they may be trying to reevaluate, given as they've looked into this and they've seen how vulnerable they are. They may be responding ahead of the lawsuit actually coming
yep.
to a conclusion, which would be great too. Let's save us all some lawyer fees.
Yes.
But when you're granting a small refinery exemption to Chevron, for crying out loud, one of the
yep.
largest oil companies in the world and one of the most profitable in the country, that clearly is not what that waiver authority was intended to do. And hopefully, either through the courts or the EPA just taking a step back and looking at it again, they will reevaluate things and put that program back on track.
Okay.
Hey,
so
Chip, I want to step in here. This is Jim Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmer.
Hey,
hi, Bob.
Jim.
Jim, how are you?
Hey, Bob, how can they even talk about, looking ahead now, any current additional waivers with RIN prices the way they are? How could you justify any downturn, even for the small refiners?
Well, indeed, RINs today are trading at less than a dime. You cannot possibly make a credible argument that that's going to impact any small refiner or large refiner, anybody's bottom line. It simply won't. So, I mean, you're right. That said, the acting EPA administrator, Andy Wheeler, has indicated previously that, they would continue to award small refinery exemption.
Yep.
I've
got one longer term question for you, Bob, very briefly. In my speeches, I point out the coming dramatic increase in the purchases of electric, vehicles, total electric. What's the long-term impact on the RFS program, and how do you deal with that?
Well, I think, I haven't seen some of your speeches recently, but I don't think that electric vehicles are coming as fast as some have suggested. GM just closed the plant where they were making the Volt, for crying out loud. We are a long ways away from electric vehicles having a meaningful impact on the gasoline market. Maybe my children's children will have more widespread availability of electric vehicles, but it's going to be a while.
Okay. All right. But we can't ignore it. It is coming. And, I mean, the use of liquid fuel, it needs to be protected if we're going to protect ethanol.
Oh, no question. But, there are opportunities potentially with electric vehicles as well
sure.
as risk. Because yes. if you're talking about a fuel cell,
yep.
It very well may be that the fuel that will be used to generate the electricity can be ethanol. In fact, there are so Nissan is producing an ethanol fuel cell vehicle today. So there are yep. opportunities there as well as risk. But as long as there are liquid transportation fuels, ethanol is going to be a yep. large part of that market.
Excellent. Excellent. Okay. 2019 final rule on the RFS. What's it going to look like, Bob?
I think it's going to look a lot like it was proposed. I think
yep.
the implied renewable volume obligation for conventional biofuels, that is ethanol, is going to be 15 billion gallons. Mm-hmm. But as we sort of talked about earlier, that doesn't mean anything if EPA is going to continue to exempt refineries yes. That don't need the charity from the program. If the 15 billion gallons becomes 13 billion gallons because they exempted 2 billion gallons of demand, as they did last year, then, you know, they are continuing to ignore the statute and to do damage to rural America, which makes no sense to me. But that's what Scott Pruitt did for sure.
Yeah, and some of those waivers are being considered right now, even as we are reevaluating what the requirements are for those waivers. And Bob, correct me if I'm wrong or if you know anything about this, but I'm hearing that the decision has already been made that some of these waivers are coming out after we get the final rule. And there's at least three waivers that have been agreed to.
Well, that's a really cynical part of this. If EPA would just require refineries to apply for these small
yep.
exemptions before the RVO
yep.
is finalized, then those gallons would be reallocated elsewhere.
Yes.
But cynically, they have sent the signal out, no, wait until after November 30th. Wait until yep. after we have finalized the RFS rules for the following year, because then we can't. Oh, we just can't reallocate those gallons.
Yeah.
Well, that's utter nonsense. You know, they say they can't go backwards, and yet for one refinery last year, they gave them a waiver retroactively from 2015, even though that refinery had complied with the law. They said, oh, you know, we probably should have given you a waiver. And so they created credits out of whole cloth, out of thin air, and gave them $30 million worth of credits for 2015. Well, if they can waive the program retroactively, they could certainly reallocate gallons prospectively or retroactively
yes.
as well.
Yes.
The double standard there is one of the things that just infuriates us.
Well, and not only that, but it seems like they think they've got this secret little loophole thing that they are working with, Bob, and you know, just wait until after the final rule is announced, and then we won't be able to. We're talking about what they are doing on national radio right now, Bob. It is no secret.
It is no secret. But last year, if you had a stamp and you knew Scott Pruitt's address, or you met him in an
yes.
apartment someplace,
yes.
you were going to get a waiver. Well,
yes.
No, that's not the way it should be. There should be some criteria that is well understood and available for public scrutiny before waivers are granted. And there has to be some demonstrable need. And
yeah.
that clearly was not the case last year.
Not on, boy, the majority of those waivers that were issued this last year, you're exactly right. There was no need for those waivers. And it's just, it's against the letter of the law in how these waivers are being handled. Announce
well,
them
the
now.
The child of the abuse of that program is going to be Chevron. I mean, you just
yep.
cannot defend giving that company a waiver from this program. So,
amen to that. Bob, it's always good to talk with you. Have a good holiday season if we don't talk to you before Christmas. And we'll talk with you again soon, though.
Absolutely. Thanks, Chip.
You bet. That is Bob Dineen, the Senior Strategic Advisor at the Renewable Fuels Association. Hey, that was cool. Wiesmeyer just dropped in on us on that conversation, had some good insights into what's going on. We're going to talk more with Jim about the Farm Bill. Looks like we've got an agreement. That's next, right here on AgriTalk.
No matter what you do, you're always raising the bar, trying to do better than ever. New DeLauro fungicide for corn and soybeans can help you get the edge you're looking for. DeLauro has a broader spectrum of disease control and best-in-class dual mode of action residual. Plus, it improves plant health, so your top-performing hybrids and varieties will have the protection they need to help you achieve your personal best yields. DeLauro from Bayer. Keep raising the bar. Always read and follow label instructions.
Current price times 1,000 acres, carry the one.
These days, it's hard to make the math work for your soybean fields. The BASF Liberty Link system with Liberty Herbicide makes it easier. Start with a 2-plus bushel per acre yield advantage. Add in lower system input costs and more complete weed control, and you get an extra $33 or more profit potential per acre compared to Asgrow Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Grow smart with Liberty Link and BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from ProFarmer.
And joining us now is ProFarmer editor Brian Grady. Brian, got a little bit of strength going in the corn market this morning.
Yeah, corn is trading higher despite weakness in both the soybean and wheat markets. And while it's up only a penny, I think it is important that corn is able to trade independently, at least so far this morning. And the reason being that weekly export sales were very strong, 1.27 million metric tons for the week ended on the 22nd. And, you know, that just shows that prices got low enough to attract global end user buying. We've been waiting on corn export demand to pick back up. Now, it's still running well ahead of the needed pace, and it is a bullish factor, but we've kind of backed off over the past month and a half or so on some of those sales, and this is a definitely a positive development.
Yeah, it's a reminder that the world still needs corn. They may have front-loaded some of their purchases earlier, the importers, but now they need to come back and refill. What has got the pressure on the soybean market this morning?
Well, a couple things. I think just some uncertainty as we head into the G20 summit between Trump and China and what's going to happen there exactly. Trump made some comments that he wants to get a deal done, but... And it's the butt that, you know, is got everybody kind of on edge at this point in time. And then the weekly export sales, they were nothing spectacular, just as expected. And so we didn't get any kind of bullish boost out of that.
Hey, what's got the cattle market under pressure today?
Well, actually, livestock in general, cattle is sharply lower, and then the hogs, they looked like they were dying, and now they've come to life. So just a reversal of roles in there, and technical-based selling in cattle and buying in hogs has definitely come into play so far this morning.
Gotcha. That's ProFarmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Hi, I'm Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths, and I invite you to join me each morning as we cover the nation's food system, from fields of green to orchards of orange and livestock everywhere in between. America runs on agriculture, and here at Ag Day, agriculture's what we do best. Listen as our analysts track the markets, learn about innovations in technology and sustainability, and live the country lifestyle through the eyes of rural America. Join me, Clinton Griffiths, for Ag Day, the country experience.
First-generation farmers are a special breed. Farm Journal business editor Annalisa Laca helps these ag unicorns tell their story on a new podcast, The First Years.
It may have been hard, but there's a lot of good things that came out of it. A lot of time we spent together and our kids, I think, were better for it.
Join me each week as I chat with first-generation farmers and ranchers who have what it takes, grit and determination, to start from nothing.
The First Years with Annalisa Laca is available where you access your favorite podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, and now the new AgriTalk.
The new True Choice offer by Pioneer Brand Seed, earned Corteva Cash.
A little elevator pump music for you to bring in Jim Wiesmeyer, ProFarmer Policy Analyst. that's perfect for you there, Wiesmeyer. How are you today?
It's not heavy metal.
That's right.
I'm pretty good. We are at the end zone on the Farm Bill, Chip. That's very
excellent.
Good news.
Excellent. Hey, that was cool that you jumped in there with Deneen, because we will get the final RFS numbers tomorrow, right? I mean, the CBO's done everything that they need to do on that.
Yeah, usually it's from about 9 o'clock Central Time to 2 o'clock Central Time, if history is any judge, and you should get it within that time frame.
Okay. All right. And tomorrow, not today.
Tomorrow. Well, okay. You never rule out.
Well,
you know,
that's right. That's right. So, okay, Farm Bill, let's get into it. What got him over the top here?
When the congressional leaders, not the Farm Bill conferees leaders, we're talking the higher ups in Congress, decided the forestry management issue. And I've seen over 40 years of watching farm bills, Chip, once you get the most thorny issue, in this case, forestry management, settled one way or the other, I think they punted it for another day, then all the other issues get agreement very fast, and that's what happened, you know, the other day.
How did forestry become the thorny issue?
Well, because, to be blunt, it was not discussed for months and months and months, and they kept on postponing that as an issue. And on the House side, they wanted more reforms again. It sounds very much like the food stamp idea of reforming. And the Senate just didn't want to go there. So they kept on saying, let's discuss this later. And when it got to the very end, there was a stalemate that could only be settled by, you know, Mitch McConnell, Paul Ryan, Trump, and, you know, some of the top Democrats.
Wow. Okay. All right. Title One, the commodity title. What are the changes?
I think farmers, this is, it's more evolutionary than revolutionary. However, there's going to be some changes I think crop producers are going to like. It looks like it's going to include a formula to increase the loan rates, and I'm not going to get into the details of that, but also an opportunity to farmers to make an annual election between modestly improved price loss coverage and the ag risk coverage program. So it won't be you have to decide for the life of the farm bill. I think that that option is a good one. And all farmers are going to be able to get updated yields, not just those affected by the drought. And it looks like the CRP maximum acres is going to be increased 3 million from 24 million now to 27 million, with a portion of that earmarked for, grasslands reserve program. I'm not quite sure yet how the rental rates are going to be based on some percent of existing, prevailing, rental rates. One of the last issues, Chip, was also the adjusted gross income test receive farm program payment. It looks like Grassley may have gotten part of what he wanted on that. I don't have the dollar level right now.
Okay. Go back to the updated yields. You said the farmers are going to get updated yields. What do you mean by that?
Well, there's going to be whatever their actual yields were for a designated number of years, then they take that yield. Now, if it's lower, then they don't have to do it, I don't think. I'd have to see the exact language yet.
Right.
So in many cases that, there were corn producers in the year 2012, right? That had a low yield.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's going to be that opportunity to update yields again, not just for farmers who are who were affected from the prior drought years, Chip. There's going to be a designated number of years that they go back on the yields. But another one was on ARC. I think corn and soybean producers got a win here. They're going to use trend-adjusted yields similar to crop insurance. There's going to be a new T-yield plug under the ARC. And then there's going to be a new, what they've told me, cascade for determining yields beginning with RMA yields. That's Risk Management Agency yields. The bottom line, Chip, on that is I think the majority of farmers are going to like it because it's going to adjust some areas that they thought was too rigid in the 2014 Farm Bill. That's the concept right there, which I think is, pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what they're trying to do is get rid of, those walls at the county borders, right?
Because it's part of the solution. Absolutely. Yeah. It's part of the solution of not being so rigid.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So that's some good news there. What that's on the yield side of things. Is there going to be any adjustments on base acres?
Now they're going to go in and and change. If you haven't planted those base acres for a designated number of years, you're going to lose that base acres, but they're going to be incentivized some way. It looks like some of that farmer grassland, if you will, can go into a conservation reserve earmarked for grassland, but you will not be able to increase base acres from what you had in the 2014 Farm Bill, despite that's conjecture to the contrary.
That sounds to me like a CSP, Conservation Security Program plan.
Well, it could be. Now, the House, again, I want to see, I just love final, I'm a nerd who reads actual language of the bill, but the House was phasing out the CSP, so I don't know how they handled that. But I'll tell you, Colin Peterson, who's going to be the new House Ag Committee chairman, is definitely a major supporter of the Grasslands Reserve Program. Yeah. In fact, he insisted on some of those increased CRP maximum acres going into the Grassland Reserve. So I think farmers who lose base will be compensated one way or the other.
Okay. What?
And we could get the bill, the actual bill, Chip, lower odds to Friday. I think it's going to take time to write the legislative language and get the final Congressional Budget Office scores. So I would say more likely Monday or Tuesday before we get the final conference report language out.
Okay, Monday or Tuesday before final bill. Sorry, I need to make that note there real quick. What about the SNAP benefits and the work requirements on it? Are there any work requirements left on this?
Well, they're not what the House proposed. They backed off of that one because you weren't going to get a farm bill as a result. Now, there are some reforms that I think Peterson and Conaway, who's House Ag Committee Chairman, Mike Conaway, Republican from Texas, agreed to. So I do think there's going to be reforms in the food stamp program, but not near to where the House leaders really wanted it to go. But that was the concession they had to make to, get a bill, Jeff.
Yeah, I am so glad that we got that it looks like we've got this done. And it looks like and sounds to me, Jim, like it's a bill that'll be able to pass. Will it be able to pass as a standalone or is it going to have to get attached to something else?
Well, as Tyne said, Senator Roberts, the Senate Ag Committee Chairman, Republican from Kansas, said last night that he thinks it'll go as a standalone bill. Well, that's from a Senate perspective. I don't know whether I'm so sure on the House side. It depends on when they whip the bill, how many Republicans say they're going to vote for it. If they don't have the majority of Republicans vote for it, then there could be a last-minute effort to just attach it to that must-pass spending bill. So what you just heard from me is that's still a murky area. But either way, they're going to find a vehicle. We will get a farm bill this calendar year, and that's good news for farm country.
That is good news, Jim. And I think people... You need to remember that if they wouldn't have gotten this done, if they wouldn't have compromised on some of the issues, if we would have gotten past January 1, Jim, it would have been an extension and a start over, right?
Well, even an extension would have been hard, but yeah, how many years? I would have hoped it would have been a multi-year because you don't want to go in this environment that a new Congress, that you're going to have different type of amendments in a new farm bill process, et cetera. So this is the best of all worlds, get it done. And Colin Peterson said that too. He didn't want to go through the whole gambit again. There's too much uncertainty in agriculture now, what with the financing problems, interest rates, and now you have, of course, the trade issues with the talk Saturday, so important to the corn, soybean, and wheat market. And now the late word from South China Morning Post, if it's accurate, not quite sure, that Peter Navarro will be at that dinner on Saturday. Yeah, so we're seeking confirmation of that. So that's could be a signal that this thing could be rougher than most people think.
Yeah, if they put Navarro at the table, it's because you got to have a bulldog sitting next to you.
But, you know, I heard Trump this morning before he left at 10 o'clock Eastern time to go to Buenos Aires. And as Brian said, it was pure Trump. He says he wants an agreement. China wants an agreement. And then his butt. But I kind of like where we are now. Well, where we are now is not pretty. It's not good for most of U.S. agriculture, if not all.
Handicap this meeting for me, Jim. Is it going to be a positive?
I think it should be a positive and will be a positive because, Chip, both Trump and Xi need this. Economic reports coming out of China shows a weakening economy, and Trump probably needs some positive news in the U.S.-China relationship more than probably he thinks, because as he goes into the 2020 potential re-election, if he doesn't get the rural vote again, he's not going to have any chance to be re-elected. 15 out of the top 20 House districts that produce the most soybeans, the House races voted for a Republican candidate. That may differ if this trade war continues much into 2019, Chip.
Jim, it's always fun to talk with you. We got to go. Thanks, buddy. That is Pro Farmer Paul. Jim will be back with us tomorrow on the Free For All. We've got Paul Winters from the National Biodiesel Board up next.
Save time and capitalize on market opportunities with Pro Farmer's Daily Advice Monitor. Whether on your desktop or on your phone, visit tryprofarmer.com and get a generous one-month free trial. Pro Farmer only focuses on the news that impacts the market, so you won't scroll through pages of articles to find what's really impacting your business. Plus, get full access to cash bids, charting tools, and more. Visit tryprofarmer.com right now. That's tryprofarmer.com.
Prepare for the future of ag technology at Farm Journal Media's Ag Tech Expo, December 3rd through the 5th in Indianapolis. Whether you're a novice or a tech-savvy early adapter, Ag Tech is your go-to source for the latest in the industry. Customize your event experience and gain a competitive edge with more than 25 educational breakout sessions focused on precision ag, using data, machinery and iron, and sustainable technology. Grower and retailer registrations only $99. Sign up today at www.farmjournalagtechexpo.com.
Save time and capitalize on market opportunities with Pro Farmer's Daily Advice Monitor. Whether on your desktop or on your phone, visit tryprofarmer.com and get a generous one-month free trial. Pro Farmer only focuses on the news that impacts the market, so you won't scroll through pages of articles to find what's really impacting your business. Plus, get full access to cash bids, charting tools, and more. Visit tryprofarmer.com right now. That's tryprofarmer.com.
Find it now at shopfarmjournal.com. Brand new to the shop is The Best of Tractor Tales, as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This 2-DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, The Best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at shopfarmjournal.com or call toll-free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at shopfarmjournal.com.
When you think of Palmer Amaranth, water hemp, ragweed, and mare's tail, doesn't it just make you want to give them the pounding they deserve? Now you can with Diflex Duo Herbicide. It's the post-emergence corn herbicide with two proven sites of action, so you get powerful control of the toughest weeds, built-in resistance management, and excellent crop safety. So don't just hit weeds. Pound them like never before with Diflex Duo. Learn more at DiflexDuo.us. Always read and follow label instructions.
It takes a degree in electronics just to work on your truck. You have to boot up 3 monitors to start planting. And watching TV? Well, that requires 4 different remotes. Yep, it's not the best time for people who enjoy simple. But we're doing our part to change that. Corteva AgriScience, the agriculture division of Dow DuPont, introduces the all-new True Choice offer. Now, this is simple. When you buy Pioneer brand seed, you earn Corteva cash that's immediately available for you to redeem at your crop protection retailer. Use that Corteva cash on more than 100 crop protection products. That's it. No waiting for a rebate, no digital fingerprinting necessary. Just a straightforward offer in an overly complicated world. Ask your local Pioneer sales representative or your crop protection retailer about True Choice. New, simple, now.
Growers face enough worries today. SDS and nematodes shouldn't be among them. Alevo seed treatment from BASF is the only product that offers effective protection against both SDS and nematodes throughout the critical growing period. Growers get amazing early season protection for stronger profit potential at harvest. So worry about weather. Don't worry about SDS or nematodes with Alevo. To find out more about Alevo and how to protect your soybeans, talk to your seed dealer or your BASF rep. Grow smart with BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
It's Digging Deeper with the Mosaic Company, the show where two agronomy experts take your questions about crop nutrition. Here are your hosts, Kurt Woolfolk and Ross Bender, senior agronomists from the Mosaic Company.
Hi, this is Kurt.
And this is Ross. And today we're answering the questions you sent us on social media.
Here's one from a corn grower in Iowa. As I plan for next season, what product would you recommend to increase yield next year?
Every crop stands to benefit from better nutrient management, especially phosphorus and sulfur. For example, Micro Essentials is a fertilizer source that contains phosphorus sulfur, and we know it works because it helps provide uniform nutrient distribution, increased nutrient uptake, and season-long availability.
We have up to 12 years of data that suggests that yield of 7.2 with Micro Essential SZ compared to traditional fertilizer sources, and the yield speaks for itself.
Fertility is the foundation for high yields, and this is the new frontier of dry fertilizer.
Have any questions you want Kurt and Ross to tackle? Tweet to us at Micro Essentials on Twitter or send us a message on Facebook. And to learn more about smart crop nutrition, visit microessentials.com.
New Dallaro fungicide for corn and soybeans can help you achieve personal best yields.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Let's go back and talk some more about biofuels. This time we're talking biodiesel with Paul Winters, Director of Public Affairs and Federal Communications for the National Biodiesel Board. Paul, welcome to AgriTalk. How are you today?
I'm doing fine. How are you, Chip?
Doing just fine, just fine. You know, when people think about the RFS, they immediately think ethanol. But it's kind of a big deal for biodiesel, too, isn't it?
It's a very big deal. Biodiesel industry contributes about 2.7, 2.8 billion gallons of fuel to the program.
Right, exactly. And now the 2.7, 2.8 billion gallons of fuel to it, that consists primarily of biodiesel. But there's some other issues that we talk about when we get to that 2.7 billion gallons, right? Some other products?
Certainly, there's renewable diesel,
and
the feedstocks are pretty varied. About half of the feedstocks come from soy. Another third of the program, though, is recycled cooking oil and animal fats. So it's a pretty diverse array of agricultural and recycled products going into biodiesel and renewable diesel.
Yeah, you know, the thing about it, Paul, the reclamation of some of those oils that have been used for cooking, and then we reclaim them, put them back into biodiesel. What a positive story for the biodiesel industry to tell about how we're getting double use out of these oils. That's such a great story.
It absolutely is, and it's not just recycling used cooking oil; it's also recycling waste products from animal processing that would otherwise just go into a landfill. They find their way into and provide economic value to that industry. So.
Yeah, absolutely. It's all really good stuff. So the 2019 final rule for the RFS, good news for biodiesel?
Well, there's some good news. Okay. EPA has recognized that biodiesel and renewable diesel contribute about 90% of the advanced biofuel requirement for the program. Mm-hmm. So in light of that, and EPA was facing a statutory increase in the annual volumes of 500 million gallons, so they essentially recognized that biodiesel was likely to fill that increase, and they bumped up the volumes for 2020 to 2.43 billion gallons in their proposal. And that was welcome news after 2 years at which they had flatlined biodiesel at 2.1 billion gallons. So it was a nice increase.
Yeah, Yeah, absolutely. It's a nice increase. And I think we could do even more volume there if we'd have some certainty on the tax credit side, wouldn't we?
That would be absolutely certain, yes. And we are working hard to impress on Congress that we need that tax credit renewed and extended for multiple years to give us that certainty.
Yeah, that multiple years there, Paul, that is the key. Looking backwards and extending a tax credit retroactively, all that does is hold us where we're at. It doesn't give the industry any confidence that it can move forward, invest in it, and expand production. It does none of that. Paul, you're exactly right. We need multiple years on that tax credit for biodiesel looking forward so that we can bring that bring that confidence to the industry. And you know, another thing that we need to keep an eye on, Paul, as we talk about confidence for the industry, is making sure that we're not getting dumped on by other countries, and Argentina in particular, when it comes to biodiesel, right?
That's correct. And I know that a lot of companies were hurt by past practices of Argentine biodiesel companies selling their product in the United States well below the market value and the fair value.
Right.
Once Commerce did take action to block that practice, our companies began to recover. They have picked up production tremendously to recapture that market. But they still need that protection to be in place, and they need more time to recover and to reach the goals and reach the production capacity that they know they can achieve.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So where we stand right now on the final rules for the RFS regarding biodiesel is, let's just not get any surprises, right? Let's make sure that they stick with what they were telling us before on the preliminary numbers.
Well, that's part of it, and we do expect the final rule to look a lot like what was proposed back in June. But there's still another issue that needs to be resolved with EPA, and that's the small refinery exemptions and properly accounting for those small refinery exemptions.
Right. You know, Paul, people think ethanol when they hear that. Why are you concerned about the refinery exemptions there?
The refinery exemptions exempt fuel across the spectrum. So EPA has recently published internal data on how many exemptions they've handed out. And since 2015, over the past 3 years, they've exempted 24.5 billion gallons of petroleum fuel, both gasoline and diesel.
Yep.
So that's just last year in 2017, that was almost an 8% reduction in the volumes of gasoline and diesel that were supposed to include renewable fuels.
Right.
And a lot of that is biodiesel.
Absolutely. So we need to get this exemption and the waiver situation straightened out. Paul, thank you for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you, Chip.
You bet. That is Paul Winters, Director of Public Affairs and Federal Communications for the National Biodiesel Board. Hey, thanks for joining us today, everybody. Thanks to Bob Dineen for joining us. Thanks to Jim Wiesmeyer for jumping in and filling us in on what to expect in the Farm Bill. Hopefully they're going to get things wrapped up, and we'll get a vote on that early this next week. Come back this afternoon. I'm going to be talking with Brian Doherty from Stewart Peterson. And tomorrow morning on AgriTalk, it's a free-for-all. Wiesmeyer's going to be back. Johnson and Haney will be joining us as well. Hey, say a prayer that President Trump represents us all well and does what he can to put agriculture here in the U.S. back on track.
Spray nozzles are some of the smallest and most overlooked pieces of equipment on a sprayer, but they can have the biggest impact on accuracy, efficiency, and drift potential. Worn nozzles can change distribution patterns and cause under or over application, potentially impacting your bottom line. Now's a great time to replace your worn nozzles. Save 10% on John Deere spray nozzles, only available at your local John Deere dealer. Offer ends February 28th, 2019. See your participating dealer for details.
Have you entered the Ag Explorer Truck Sweepstakes? You could win a Ford F-150 Raptor. And since only farmers are eligible, the odds are in your favor. Visit TruckSweeps.com and enter by December 26. 8 semifinalists will win valuable prizes. And one lucky farmer will take delivery of a 2019 Ford Raptor. Enter the Ag Explorer Truck Sweepstakes and see complete rules at TruckSweeps.com. No purchase necessary.
Thanks to Acuron Corn Herbicide for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your retailer about upgrading your weed control with Acuron. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide.